Okay, welcome to the chill out edition of Bread Time. My name is Gabriel Valdivia.
Yeah, hey, I'm Charlie D. We're in a chill mood today, so we're going to be a slightly relaxed tone, but hopefully it's a relaxed conversation that puts you in a good mood. Drink some coffee right now, sit back in your chair, stare thoughtfully at the ceiling. That's the right vibe for this conversation.
One of my previous managers used to say the thing about more hammer, less yammer, in the sense that designers need to spend more time working and building things and less time talking about the things that they build. But we're not going to do that today. Today, we're just going to talk about talking and what it's like to present your designs in a way that is successful and effective. And Charlie actually wrote some pretty good points about designing a presentation that is effective. We can talk about that today and flesh it out a bit more.
Okay, yeah, I think I'm pretty similar to you. I think it's like the thing that was on my mind was that I do all this work and then I go into a critique or something like that and I just destroy it because I don't present it in the right way. The conversation gets loose and crazy. Everyone's bringing up like random ideas and basically all the work I've done sort of like falls to the wayside to the conversation that we're having about it. So I guess I've developed what, I mean, other people I've watched do this as well, but I've developed a system that basically works for me that it sounds weird, but I try to like control the conversation as much as possible. And the way I do that is I start with like a really clear problem of what I was trying to solve. And then I try to discuss like the thinking that went into the solution that I'm going to present, as well as like alternative ways of thinking.
That's so key though. And it's so easy to forget, at least for me, to kind of repeat the problem over and over again, especially after you work on a problem for a long time with a team and you kind of, you know, get used to meeting in a room multiple times a week and talking about this thing over and over again. At a certain point, you kind of ignore or kind of take the problem for granted and you forget about framing it. And it's so important to every time you present your designs to go back to, you know, to ground zero and present your problem.
It can almost like sound antagonizing sometimes when you go back to the problem every single time you talk about it, because like everyone's like, yeah. But honestly, like people are coming to the thing that you're talking about from different angles. And some people might not remember the problem or even be familiar with it at all yet. So I think it's always like important to do it, even if it sounds really like boring to the people that have heard it 50 times. But yeah, just like restating that thing every single time, because if you don't state it, then the rest of your conversation is going to be off base, right?
Totally.
So I basically don't show the designs right away at all. Like I'm holding off on showing the designs. And then the next thing I do is after I've got everyone on board for the design thinking and like problem that we're solving, then I state what I think the open questions are. And the open questions to me are the things that I haven't solved, right? So like some of the things I've made that are decisions I think are off the table. Like maybe if we're talking about, I don't know, like a light theme versus a dark theme. And we're like, we're going with the light theme because that's now like a solidified part of the solution. But the variations of that are open questions, right? So I try to define what we can critique and what we can't in that part of the conversation.
That's interesting. I would typically do that at the end. I like to frame the feedback as a question and answer. And I usually try not to leave something open-ended. So when I'm done presenting something, I follow it up with, okay, so my questions are, you know, da-da-da-da. And it's interesting that you do that at the beginning before you even show anything at all.
Yeah. And it's another one of those moments that almost feels like antagonistic because it's like people are pretty much like, okay, let's get to the designs at that point, right? But what I'm just trying to do is like set the framework about what we're going to be discussing. And like, they're not going to remember all of the questions that I asked during that point or whatever, but I basically want to put that out there so that people know, like, I can go back to that and I say, I go down that list. Like, have we solved this one? Have we solved this one? Have we solved this one? Like, is this still an open question? You know, like I just go back to that slide throughout the rest of the conversation to gauge whether we're having like what I wanted out of the conversation. Cause that's what I think I'm supposed to be doing during critique, getting answers to my questions.
My rule is never, ever, ever have a slide with bullet points in it. And instead, have a slide per bullet point. So
Each
each slide should show one message and one idea and only one idea. If you require a bullet point to have more than one idea, then you should have multiple slides.
Totally agree. Yeah, I think of it often as like each slide just represents finding alignment in one way. So like, is this the same problem? Do we all agree that this is the problem? Okay, now we can move to the next slide. This is the thinking. Do we all agree that this is like the thinking that we want to solve this with? Okay, we can move forward, right? Like each one operates as like a placeholder in the conversation for moving to the next decision point or piece of information.
Well, another one that helps me with designing decks is this book by Scott McCloud called Understanding Comics, which I think was key for me. And the idea is that a slide deck is basically a comic. And each slide is a frame of your comic book. And you're designing kind of a story that is a frame by frame. And the idea behind the book is that you design each frame so that the user fills in the information between two frames. And if you read the book and you kind of listen to the points that they make and apply them from a comic book to a slide deck, I think it is very helpful.
That's really good. Everyone always says to read that book, and I have read it actually, but I never really connected the dots there. Like it is, that's like a remarkably good way to think about it. Like moving from point to point, the way you move from basically story point to story point in a comic is a remarkably similar way of thinking.
Yeah, and you're designing a story, right? Your slide deck should have a beginning, middle, and end, and there should be payoffs and hopefully comedic moments to kind of connect with whoever you're presenting to. That's something that I usually consider when I design decks.
I save my joke for the very last slide, and instead of saying like conclusion or end, I usually make up some sort of verbose statement as to how the process is complete or something like that. My humor is really funny, for the record.
Mine bombs quite often, actually. I've had, when I was working at Facebook, I had slides that were not very flattering to Mark Zuckerberg. He did not laugh. And most times, people feel very uncomfortable by things like that. So
yeah, I've seen your slides bomb. And to be honest, you can be on either side of it. I found it rather amusing, but I also could understand people who did not.
Something else that bombed, which is I found rather surprising, is that I used to spend so much time creating prototypes, videos or demos of an interaction. And I spent so much time finding music to go behind the demo. Like I would time the taps to the beat of the song, and I would time different flows to the song, and I would sometimes create my own song. And like I thought that artifact was so fun and so exciting to like put it together with music and make it a little thing. And a few years ago, I was told that by my manager. It was basically like, yeah, you should probably not put in songs. And I was like, well, what? Yeah. The songs are the best. I love the songs. And they're like, no, it's just distracting and people don't like it. Like, what?
Yeah, it's real weird because like in like a marketing context or in sort of like a presenting an idea in an exciting way, that music and like extra visual representation tends to be like desirable. But for whatever reason, in a business context, when people are like really in the weeds with the work, it does turn them off. They don't want to deal with it. And I find that basically like any sort of style to the deck, the presentation, anything actually distracts from just like working on the problem. Like the more bare bones it is, actually the more like people just stay focused and stuff. I guess people like don't want to be excited when they're working, which kind of does make sense. You're more likely to make probably sound judgment when you're, you know, not enticed by something or excited by it.
Yeah, I guess the lesson there is, you know, to not distract away from the work. And I guess the more style and decoration you put into it, the more precious it feels, and probably the more it deters people from giving feedback in a way that might be destructive, right? In a way that might change the outcome of whatever it is that you're building. So it's a bummer because I did love making that music, but you know, onward.
The hardest part for me is actually like just showing one thing, right? Because like you do all this work and then you know that maybe the thing you're about to show isn't like finished. You know, it's not like perfect. There's more that needs to be done, or it has problems in certain ways. You may not know what they are yet. But I think it's like important to just show one thing first instead of showing like a plethora of options. And that moment is always really hard because you have to put confidence in something that you're not totally confident in pretty often. But I think it keeps the conversation focused. Like when you show a bunch of options right in the beginning, everyone's like, well, did you try this one? Did you try this one? Did you try this one? It's like, even if you did try those, you can't show all the options because that doesn't make any sense to anybody. If you show five options, everyone's going to like kind of gravitate towards the ones you didn't show. If you show one option, people just have to talk about that one thing. And it feels weird.
Yeah, I think you and I are different in that approach as well. I guess it depends on what I'm presenting, but if it's like a design critique or something like that, I usually choose from like top three. Mm-hmm. And I frame the feedback around those three, like which of these three does a better job doing X or solving the problem that, you know, that we stated at the beginning. And then it becomes about comparing tangible things or, you know, things that you can visually react to rather than hypothetical things. I feel like if I only show one, people make up an idea in their head of what the, you know, ultimate solution to that would be. And they design something else in their head. And I think that to me gets to a dangerous territory. So showing like three for me helps, because then it's like, well, you can take this part of this one and that part of that one and, you know, combine them all into the solution. And it feels more tangible for me.
Okay. So another tip I had in there was like keeping the conversation objective. So people just like obviously want to be like, oh, I like that one, right? It's a very natural thing. You're having feelings about this stuff. But I basically try to not let anyone ever give that type of feedback. If they're like, I like this, I'm like, okay, what is desirable about it to you? Like, what makes you respond that way? And you just like push them until the answer is objective. And if you do that relentlessly, the conversation in general just tends to be that way, because people know like you're not going to let them off the hook with a, I don't like that. Okay, what don't you like about it? What are you responding poorly to here? Like, you know, if you always follow up with that stuff and don't let anyone get off the hook with like a just gut emotional response, people tend to sway away from doing that in a conversation completely.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that's when framing things under a question really helps me. Instead of asking kind of broadly, what do you think about this? I usually try to frame it with it like, do you think this helps solve this problem, or kind of make it a little more constrained? And it usually avoids those kind of broad statements like, I like it, I don't like it. And just real quick, probably my biggest pet peeve in the world design is, or just in the world in general, is when people say, that's interesting. Like,
you're in the right
room. Next time you're in a room and somebody say that's interesting, slap them across the face. Like,
I don't think that's a good solution.
It drives me insane. Like, interesting is the least interesting word.
When people say something's interesting to me, I just read it as, this is ambiguous. They don't feel anything about it, right? Like, interesting literally means that it's not interesting. It's not provoking them to have like a full thought. So it means it's usually foggy or muddy, or it doesn't have clarity in some way.
Yeah, slap across the face usually fixes the fogginess.
Yeah, I don't know. That doesn't work great in a corporate environment, but sometimes when I open the sketch document or whatever I'm working in, I just open it with like all the artboards exposed. And then I just quickly zoom into the one that we're talking about. And the reason I do that is just to be like, hey, there's more out there. It's like just kind of letting the room know, like, there's more out there, but this is the thing we're talking about. You don't get to see it all, but just to let you know it's there. Because I think a lot of people are just like, I don't know if they assume this or if I assume that they assume this, but I'm like assuming that they think, oh, well, he didn't do the work in these ways to like figure out all of the variations that we could actually have here, especially when I only show like one thing or something like that. But that technique always makes me feel a little more comfortable. Like, okay, the room knows now that there's like a lot of stuff out there if we want to talk about it. But I don't know, I feel like it satiates that need a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, like a little tease.
Just a little tease. Like, oh yeah, you want artboards? I got a lot of those, but I'm not going to overwhelm you with them.
Now, I don't think you'll admit this on air, but blink twice if this is true. Do you ever duplicate the artboards just to make it appear like you have a lot of explorations?
Oh my God, no. I've never even done that at all. Have you? I wouldn't believe it.
No, of course not. That's a horrible idea.
My God, you totally do. That's great, though. That's a good technique. I should add it to the article.
Okay, another tip I have. This one, it might be unintuitive for a few people, but it's a simple one, and that is to smile. Like, present and smile. Like, make it a pleasant experience. Don't give it a lot of gravitas. Like, I think if you lighten the mood, you kind of give people license to kind of give you those opinions that might be most controversial, and those are the ones that are usually the most valuable. And the least precious you make the whole atmosphere, I think, the better. Usually I do that with some self-deprecating joke or something to take away the mantle of a precious artist who's presenting his art, and more of a, hey, we're all doing this together, you know, let's make something out of it together.
To me, the thing that I always want to come across is open to feedback. Because like, sometimes I will like straight up in the middle of it be like, and get upset. I'll be upset because like the conversation isn't going the way that I want it to, right? But I think it's like, but if you become defensive, the conversation will fall apart completely. So like, the thing that's on my mind is always just like, keep listening and like take it all in. And like, I'm going to be able to get through the emotions that I'm feeling over the course of time. I just got to like not let that interrupt the conversation that I'm having.
Yeah. And a little secret is you don't actually have to address all the feedback all the time. Like, yeah. Somebody gives you feedback, you disagree with it, you can just nod your head and just think to yourself, never going to do that. And then keep going. I think, you know, there's a certain degree of, you know, designer knows best. And, you know, you should be able to develop your own rubric for when to do that. But I think designers can sometimes feel overwhelmed by presenting something and getting like, you know, a flurry of feedback and a lot of like a giant list of to-dos. I think sometimes people are just expressing their reactions and you don't necessarily have to address it.
Yeah, I think in the, like, I've determined with myself, like 100% of the time in the moment, the feedback that I get, I'm unlikely to know whether it's valuable or not right there. Because I have all these thoughts that I've built up about the work that I've done, and I have these beliefs that I've built up about it, right? So if you give me something that's contrary to it or taking me in a totally different direction, I don't know how to process that immediately. So I just take it in and I hold on to it. And then I deal with the feedback later because I don't know what's actually going to be valuable or not. I'm just trying to collect it in that moment and then use it to like build into my process as I go through the next steps.
Yeah. One thing that you mentioned in the article, which I agree with, is to capture the feedback like on the screen as it's happening in real time, whether it's like by annotating your sketch file or like opening a notes doc and writing it there. I think regardless of whether you address the feedback or not, the fact that you write it down makes the people in the room feel acknowledged, and it helps you to revisit it afterwards to kind of like process it after the emotional roller coaster has ended.
One thing that I've definitely continue to learn is people just hate change. And so much feedback comes from that initial reaction of, this is changing. I don't know why. I don't know what's valuable about it yet. And therefore, I don't like it. That is like the starting point for a lot of feedback. And commonly, I feel like if I show work to someone the first time, they might be like, no. But after it sinks in a little bit and they see it again, like, I've been thinking about this thing for a week or something, I show it to you once, you might just be like, oh, that's not working. But they're really actually reacting to the change. They're reacting to the newness of the experience, and they don't see potentially the value in it yet. But sometimes it takes people a little time to like accept an idea, and you might get feedback maybe in a second round or a third round where the two parties like align and you actually start to have a productive conversation. So don't like give up the first time always on negative feedback, I guess is my like thoughts there.
I think the single most important trait of a designer is perseverance. And design is a combination of ideas, and those ideas sometimes are new. And anytime anybody is confronted with new ideas, they're going to react to it probably poorly. They're going to react to it in a way that is, you know, confrontational and to some degree reject those ideas. But it's only the designers who are patient enough to revisit that design with those ideas over and over and over again. So those ideas stop becoming new and start becoming familiar. I think that's what gets something out the door and gets people on board.
Yeah, and then you have to go through the whole process again, actually, after you get everyone on board to a new idea, build the idea, and then put it out in public, where then everyone else who uses the product now has to go through that process. And that's not fun in its own right, but that's a different conversation.
and I think the key is to design new things so it doesn't surprise anybody. This idea of things being like obvious in retrospect, you know, some people nail it. And to me, it's been really hard to understand how that works. But, you know, it's not about designing something that you're like blown away. It's about introducing ideas that are new, but don't feel new. They just feel necessary. They feel like obvious.
The less the design is in the way, the less like what you were saying, if it just seems obvious and it just seems like it should have been that way all along, that's the right design. And it's not always exciting, but those tend to be the designs that are the right ones.
It's real fucking depressing, man. It's like design is like being the bassist in a rock band.
Yeah, just keep it going. Just keep the song going.
Like, nobody wants a bassist just like showing off and like fucking slapping throughout the entire song.
I certainly don't.
You're gonna sit in the back and play to your beat and shut the fuck up.
And with that, our latest episode of Bread Time. I hope you had the best time ever. So we appreciate you listening. We appreciate you listening to us through all of our different moods that we present ourselves in. We would both love to hear what your thoughts are on this topic. We both really are interested in it and excited to hear more thoughts. So yeah, get in touch with us.